Be'ezus Hashem, we are now going to begin our Parsha class, Parshas Vayishlach, and it's right now the 12th day of the month of Kislev, Tov Shin Pei, corresponding with the English calendar. It's the 9th of December, 2019. Parshas Vayishlach, in a sense, is a continuation of the golus, of the exile that Yaakov has endured. What do I mean that continuation? Parshas Vayetze, the last week's parsha, is when Yaakov fled from his brother Esav by the command of his mother Rivka to somehow leave his presence until his wrath would be subdued. And he ran to Lavan, his uncle. And Parshas Vayetze actually is a parsha of how a Jew lives in Golus. It's a parsha that Yaakov Avinu had inaugurated Tefillas Arvus. I'm going back a little bit in the parsha, and I'm mentioning it for one reason, is because, as I said, that Vayishlach is the continuation of Golus. This falls into line to why Yaakov Avinu initiated Maariv. Maariv is the tefillah at night. And he initiated the tefillah at night because Yaakov symbolized the Jew living in the night of Golus. And Maariv is a tefillah we daven daily, every night. Maariv, without going into detail, shows the Jew that Hashem is still with him even at night. And as long as he is connected to Hashem during the day, Hashem is still with him at night. Now, day and night are just the symbols of the time when the Jew lives in peace and harmony, and night is the time when the Jew lives in terror, in a time of persecution. Vayishlach continues this episode of a Jew in Golus, because now, after Yaakov left the house of Lavan on his way back to his home in Beersheba to go honor his father and mother, Yaakov is now going to have to face not Esav himself only, but Esav's Malach. And we're going to go through some of the psukim and talk about how a Jew in Golus is to react while he's living with Esav, with the dangers of Esav, with the threats of Esav, and how he communicates with Esav. It's extremely, extremely important parsha that deals with Golus. And as I said a moment ago, it's a continuation of Parsha Vayetze, and we're going to try to develop some of the messages of this parsha. So let's begin the text of the parsha. We're going to begin on page 170 in Parsha Vayishlach, that's in your art scroll Chumash. And we begin. This is a time where Yaakov is on his way home and wants to know if Esav is going to meet him in a climate of peace, or he is prepared to continue show his anger and wrath in a climate of war. So let's now begin. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefanov El Esav Achiv, and Yaakov had sent before him Malachim, real angels. Rashi says Malachim Mamish, real angels, to Esav his brother, meaning to see how Esav his brother is now prepared to greet and treat him, how Esav is going to meet him. Arts of Seir, to the land of Seir, Sedei Edom. So the Malachim are going to go into enemy territory, so to say. And
Spies?
Not spies, because as soon as the Medrash says they were direct, there was no spies. They were coming there, Malachim, and they wanted to scout out to see who is this Esav think he is, and how his plans are going to materialize. And they were going to come back and report this to Yaakov. And he commanded the malachim, the angels, which were his messengers, the following. So you shall say to my master Esav, Kayoma Avdacha Yaakov, so says your servant Yaakov, Im Lovin Garti, with Lovin I have sojourned Va'echa Ad Ota, and I have tarried until now. Now, right away, you can see from the Pasuk, one way of treating Esav is by giving him covered, enormous amount of respect. And in the process of doing that, he puts himself down and calls himself an Eved, your servant Yaakov. There is, again, hidden messages over here why he had to say, I live with Lavan and have stayed there until now. But we're not going to go into the details, because there's so much to say. And I just want to get to my point where I want to dwell on in this parasha. So right away we see that Yaakov Avinu is talking to Esav, to the Malachim, putting himself down and raising the respect of Esav in his eyes. And he's now talking about his possessions. I have all these animals, an ox and donkey and sheep, and servants and maidservants, and I'm going to be sending you these things to, in order to find favor in your eyes. Now, he is trying to impart a message that the blessings that Esav is so upset about really didn't come true. It's now 20 years passed by, actually. 20 years passed by, and there was no bracha that father gave us or gave me. So I've been like a wanderer for this whole time. Now I'm coming back. This is not called a blessing. He's trying to get Esav to realize that his feelings of anger should be subdued. Let's go further. Pasuk Zayin. Vayeshuvu ha-malachim al Yaakov lema, and the malachim returned to Yaakov saying, Banu el achicha el Esav, we have come to your brother Esav, gam holak lekwas, but he's also coming to meet you. V'yarve meos ish imo, and 400 men are with him. In other words, 400 soldiers. He is not coming to give you just a kiss. He's here to come to finish you up, finish you off. He's coming with 400 men. Vayira Yaakov Ma'od, and Yaakov was very frightened. Vayetzelo, and he was distressed. Vayachet es ha'om ha'she'ito, and he divided the people with him. Ves hatzon, and the sheep, as habokar, and the cattle, the hagimalim, and the camels, which they machinos. He divided his possessions into two camps. By Yomer, and he said, Yim yavo Esav el hamachna achas v'yikov, if Esav shall attack one of the two camps, v'hoya hamachna hanisha lifleita, then the second machna, the second camp, will be able to flee to safety. V'yomer Yaakov, at that point Yaakov said, okay, Avi, the God of my father, Avi Avram, and the God of my father, which is okay, Avi Avram, the father of my father, the God of my the father's father, which is Avram, okay, of Yitzchak, and the God of my father Yitzchak, Hashem Ha'ayme Elai, and Hashem who spoke to me saying, Shuvah Artacha, return to your land, to your birthplace, Ve'tiva Imach, I'm going to do good with you, all right. He says, I'm not coming to come to ask you, Hashem, because I am worthy. I am very impoverished. I'm diminished with merit. I'm just asking you to please help me. I am small with all the chesed that you have done to me, and with all the truth that you have done to your servant. You, Hashem, have done to me so much. I crossed this Yarden, this river, Jordan, with just my stick. And now I turn into two camps with children and with possessions. Save me from the hand of my brother and from the hand of Esav. Because I fear him. Unless he comes and smites mother upon child. So let's stop over here and just continue a bit the story outside and then focus on the very, very important Rashi. And the story continues. I just want to go outside. So what he does, he goes ahead and he puts together a gift. He's going to start preparing himself for a gift. The gifts are livestock, and they're going to be put in a formation where they go in groups, not together, but to be divided with equidistant between one group and the other, and each group would be further so far that it would be almost too far to tell what it is. But you can tell something is moving towards you. And he did this to send this group or groups of animals as a doron, as a gift, to excite Esav, to make him think very, very excitedly, oh, there's something happening with my brother Yaakov. What is this? And the first thing went ahead and prepared himself with the Doran. Doran is the gifts. And then he then prepared himself to daven with tefillah, and finally he prepared himself with mochama by dividing his camp into two parts. And the two camps were divided in such a way that he put the ones that he felt closest to, not that he does not love or felt close to any one of his children, any one of his wives, but if he had to make a choice, which machne, which camp he would want to flee to safety, he first put the machne that he felt so close to behind the other machne. So the first machne was Leah and her six children, Bill and Zilpah with her two children. Then another machne was Rachel and Bilhah. Rachel that had only Yosef, and Bilhah who had other two children, right? Dan and Naphtali, I believe. So now, this was preparation for war. Now, as I said, there's so much in these psukim, and I can go off on a tangent, and there would be no time to go focus on a certain point. But I just rest assured that this parasha is loaded with very important information in how a Jew is to conduct himself in Galus.
I have one question about the prayer.
Yes.
So in Pasuk Yud Gimel, why is he reminding God what God said to him? I mean, why would you remind? I mean,
he's not reminding God. He's saying, he says, I am imploring that I was promised. I need your intervention. I want you to know if you.
But he goes on to say in detail, I will surely do good with you, and I will make you. I mean, he's quoting. I mean, at least in English, he's quoting what was told to him before.
Okay.
It's so, like you reminding your parents.
Let's stop for a minute. Here, he's in distress. In his mind, he might be killed. Hashem, I just want you to know, I know you can do it. You told me that I will be blessed with a future. I will be blessed with children, kachal hayam, like the sands of the sea. I need you right now just to be my right-hand supporter. Well, right now, I'm not that he doubts Hashem remembers. He is engaged in tefillah. Now, we're going to actually, you touched upon the main point of tonight's lesson, and I'll tell you why. We're going to focus on the part over here. Remember,
I work in a large company.
Yaakov is teaching the Jew in Golus how to react to Esav, who is there in Golus. So we're going to look at a Rashi, a very important Rashi. The Rashi is in Pasuk Tes on page 172. It's, if you see the bold letters, V'hoya hamech na'anisho lefleita, if you see those bold, it's one third of the page down. If you can get to that spot, I would like to draw your attention. Right. Okay.
But it's not in the cards right now because we're still focusing on the Mishnah. But you know what? We're going to bridge it.
Let's read to Rashi. A line and a half.
I make me feel like you're.
Bahaya Hamachna Nisha Leflaita.
Al Korachai.
They'll run. Out of desperation to leave the scene of a danger. Why will they run? Because I, Yaakov, will be in front of both machnos and fighting with a sword or whatever hand weapons I have to ward off the enemy so then everybody can run away. But at least one camp will run to safety. Look at Rashi that says the next comment, which is extremely important. Hiskin atzma l'shloisha devarim. He prepared himself for three things. L'doren, for gifts. L'tfila, for prayer. Or l'milchama, and for war. Now he explains. L'doren, he prepared himself for a gift. What does that mean? The pasuk says, "V'ta'avu hamincha al ponav," and the gifts were led in front of him, so that he was able to examine what was going to be sent. The tefillah, where do we recognize that he davened for safety? Elokei Avi Avraham, the God of my father Avraham. All right. L'melchama, where do we see that he prepared for war? V'hoya hamachna hanisha l'fleita, and the second camp will be able to run to safety when a war erupts. So we see there are three things. These three things Yaakov Avinu has taught the Jewish people, taught his children, that these are the three things how we, his descendants, are to react when we are in danger of meeting up with an Esav. Now, I've taken this Devar Torah called Sichas Mordechai from the Rosh Yeshiva, the late Rosh Yeshiva of Motel Weinberg, Zecha Tzadik Uvracha. He wrote a sefer called Sichas Mordechai. And he said some marvelous things on this parsha, and he's focusing on that Rashi that I just read. So Rashi is telling us the formula of how a Jew should approach an Esav is three things. The Doran, give him gifts, give him money. In our world, we'll call that bribe him. Give him whatever excites him to make him feel that you respect him and you want his goodwill. Someone gives you a gift, you say thank you. Someone gives you something you didn't expect, you feel honored and surprised, right? He's indebted to you. He's right. This is a certain natural thing. The first thing is Doran. The second thing is Tefillah. The Daven to Hashem for success. And the third, you can't just allow yourself to be killed. You have to prepare yourself for war. And to protect yourself and to fight off the enemy. Now, Rav Motel Weinberg Zitzal explains, he quotes a Ramban. A Ramban on this psukim, and the Ramban explains that Yaakov Avinu did not want to rely on a nes. He did everything in his physical power to be able to succeed with this dangerous encounter, encountering Esav. And what did he do with his, which was in his power? He did the gifts. He gave him these gifts, which is a natural way to get the person, the adversary, on your side to at least make him look at you with grace and with a little bit pity, right, and rachmanis, and mercy. But there's another thing, which is also physical ishtavlis, was prepare for war. And that can save your life. You don't just sit with your hands folded, but you want to prepare for war. But the Ramban explains over here that with all of this, he also included tefillah. That Yaakov Avinu was using tefillah as a form of hishtadlus, as a form of being able to be saving himself. In other words, as Rabbi Yeruchim Lubavitch explains over here that there's a marvelous thing that's happening with these three things. Yaakov did not look for miracles. Yaakov went ahead and tried to do whatever physically capable, what he's physically possible to do. And tefillah was not a nes. Tefillah was a physical, a natural phenomenon that was going to take place to save his life. And he was mishtadel. He tried to go ahead and save his life with tefillah. Now, this is something a little bit remote from us when we think tefillah, okay, I have some kind of connection with the Almighty and we hope some miracle will take place, and these are things that are beyond our conception. Malachim are involved. We know that tefillah has tremendous power, but Yaakov Avinu did not look at tefillah that way. He wanted us to look at tefillah that tefillah is a teva, is a nature. that when you daven, you can do miracles. You can change. It's a teva. It's not imploring to God that a miracle should take place. When he was davening, while he was trying to prepare himself for Ace of Encounter, the tefillah was on the same level as giving a gift, as preparing for war. Now let's go back a bit. Giving a gift. You want to bribe somebody. The Torah tells us that giving a gift to a judge will mix him up and will tilt and turn the judgment of that judge more in favor on your side rather on the other opponent's side, because after all, you've been such a nice guy. Now, even if the judge is scrupulously honest, and he is squeaky clean, so to say, from any suspicion of being a person who is influenced by bribe. He is clear. He's a Talmud Chacham. He knows what he's doing, and the psak, the judgment of the matter, is almost clear cut. Even a average person could say that's probably what the judgment would be. The Torah says you're forbidden to give even the judge that knows the outcome even before setting the jury and the court ready for a hearing. Because there's a teva, a nature, in giving a bribe that it makes the person who is accepting the bribe on your side. It's a teva. It's a nature. And you think automatically, intuitively, to be a positive individual towards, bent towards this person who gave you a gift. Whether the gift could be in form of money, whether the gift could be in form of a favor, whether the gift is in form of political or influential power, doesn't matter. Any kind of bribe can change. But that's a teva. A war is also a teva. It's also nature. You go to war, and you fight, and you're stronger, and you win the war. That's called a nature. Yaakov Avinu is bringing to our attention that the act of davening is also a teva. It's a very important thing to try to grasp what I'm saying. Just like giving a gift can change the feeling of Esav, just like a war is a teva that can save Yaakov from Esav, tefillah is also an incredibly important part of hishtadlut, of effort, that could change the whole picture of Esav's encounter. Because tefillah is not just a miracle, but tefillah is a teva, is a nature, and it could accomplish. Now we have a lot in history that supports that, where tefillah is a nature, and tefillah is important, and it's part of the chuk, the chukim of Judaism, that when you daven to Hashem, there is a listening ear. So the difference is, how qualitative is your tefillah? How much kavana do you have when you daven? The question is then, tefillah could be recognized on many different levels. Tefillah could be recognized as someone doing his duty by davening Shmoneh Esrei, for example, Shachris Mincha Maariv, and he got it over with. He did it. He's done his due. But then, tefillah could be avodah shebalev. I'll quote a pasuk or two that you're probably familiar with. Korov Hashem l'chol korov. Hashem is close to all those call him. L'chol asher yikra'uhu ve'emes. For those who call him, who try to beseech him in truth. Man needs parnasa, and there's a fella who's davening with his eyes closed, and he knows that he needs heavenly intervention, so he should be matzliach in a certain business deal. And he is not babbling through his davening. When he says Shema Kaleinu, his eyes are closed, and you might even notice a drop of tear, because he knows he is not in the driver's seat. This is a person who is connecting with Hashem. You are talking to him. He is listening to you. And not that there is a chance for a miracle to take place. You are now actually activating Teva, nature, in the world of tefillah. There is something natural taking place during your davening. Let's go further. We say in davening, Elu devorim, she'adam ochel parasayim ba'olam hazeh, va'akeren kayem eslo ba'olam haba. The following list are those items that will still earn you the world to come, but is an opportunity to cash in, even in this world, in its many blessings. And you know which one of them it is? We say, kivur of aim, we say, and concentration in the davening. You know what that means? That means there are two people davening. One person's davening in the eyes of Hashem could be worth 100 points, and another person's davening in the eyes of Hashem is worth 1,000 points. Same tefillah, but he put his mind and his heart into the davening, and you can see that he's talking to Hashem. He has something to say. He's having a conversation with the Almighty above. He is engaged in tefillah. Tefillah like that is now considered not just babbling words, but it's an avoda shebelev. When we say, "V'hoyim shemoa tishma el mitzosai," we say, "Over Ashenach, v'avas Hashem kem b'chol ul avdai b'chol v'avakem b'chol na'afshechem," and you serve God with all your heart. What is that referring to? It's referring to tefillah. So again, tefillah has a nature. Let's make it more tangible. The nature of water is to get wet. The nature of fire is to burn. The nature of heat rises. The nature of things of cold descends. Right? The nature of light goes in a straight line. There's a nature, a natural thing that happens. Right, the nature of tefillah is to be heard, and accomplishes according to the way it was received in heaven. Yaakov Avinu is teaching us in here, Gullus, how to come around an Esav. You need a doiran, a gift. You need tefillah, prayer. And then you need Mohammed. Don't walk around with your hands folded and says, "Okay, I'm waiting for something miraculous." No, you got to be mishtadel. We say in Hebrew, hishtadlut. Right? You have to show an effort. But tefillah is an effort. This is Yaakov Avinu's prescription how to meet an Esav. And Hashem listens to the tefillah that you're davening, and he perceives the level of tefillah, how it is sent, and he perceives it in that way, how he reacts. Yeah, go ahead.
So I guess I'm having problems grasping
Please.
The way that Tefillah is at the same level of the other two, because
yes.
you think that, like, sorry, I'm thinking of it as Tefillah results in success of either the gifts or the or war. But isn't like Tefillah is something separate. So Tefillah itself is something that would actually, bring
on. No. So again, like a tripod, has three legs, and you need all three to make the thing on top stand, right?
Okay.
Yaakov is going to meet an Esav, his arch enemy, and he has. With his Chachmas HaTorah said, these three things I am going to be mishtadel, I am going to try to save my life, and with these three things I am passing this over to the next generation. I'm going to pass this over to the next generation. He's telling us to recognize that Tefillah is the same level as a gift to a bribe, to bribe a Russia. It's as powerful as going with a sword, or in today's day and age could be a tank and bombs and stuff like that. But it's also a teva. When you daven, there is a nature, and something's taking place.
Yeah. I'm suggesting that in the concept of emunah or bitachon,
right?
You can't just have the emunah. You got to
right. You have that action.
You have to go and have those components
Along with it. Of course. When you dive in, thank you for mentioning that, because it's really part and parcel. The quality of your tefillah depends on your emun and bitachin. And if you have the faith in Hashem and you're communicating with Him, right, then the tefillah will represent what you're davening for. Here is a man, Yaakov is begging for his life, that he shouldn't be destroyed by this man Esav with 400 men. So when he's davening for Hatzlacha. He's davening so he should survive. So he means what he's saying. He's not just davening just to go through the motions.
It is interesting, because I was just thinking about this.
Yes.
Because you think of the three types of relationships between man and God, man and himself.
Yes.
You can say these three things are also aligned, because he prepares man the gift.
Right.
Prepares man himself.
Right.
Preparing for war.
Right.
And between man and God, so
right.
the prayer. So.
So anyway,
are you suggesting that when we look for a minion, that helps you
engage with the Almighty? You know something? You are 100% right. A minion of people who are, I don't want to use the word elite, but they understand the quality of davening, and they are engaged in what they're saying, and they are involved with a wholesome, very, 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 very serious conversation with Hashem while they're going through each tefillah. Naturally, this goes higher and makes the tefillah of the entire tzibah higher. There is a halacha, and I might as well say it to you now, because it's apropos. You know, a person is in the minyan, and there's a Rosh Yeshiva in the minyan, and his tefillah is on a higher level. Our tefillah has been raised as a result of that, because of his tefillah. You have to understand that. So what we're walking away with is that tefillah is very, very important, and it's not to be taken like some of us might think. Okay, we're going to beg for a miracle. Tefillah is a nature that happens to accomplish as you daven. The quality of your tefillah all depends and how you approach tefillah. What you can accomplish with that is also dependent on how you engage yourself with the tefillah. But Yaakov Avinu is telling us when you go into Golish, you need these three things, and tefillah is a nature that goes together with sending a gift or going to war. And it accomplishes. Now we have examples throughout history. Let's take, for example, Yishmael. Yishmael was banished from the house because he attempted to kill Yitzchak, together with his mother Hagar. And we are, I'm sure, familiar with that episode.
You're not going to wage war with that.
The result at that point was that he had a terribly high fever. Chazal tell us that Sarah put an eye in horror. He was very. No, you have to understand, he nearly killed Yitzchak. And he had a terribly high fever, couldn't even walk. And Hagar had to carry him away with a loaf of bread and a container of water. And she got lost in the desert. And he was suffering from thirst because he, in a high fever situation, had to drink more and more and more. Finally, the canteen was empty. And he was dying out of thirst. So she threw him near a desert plant. And she went 2,000 cubits away from the distance, that's the distance away from her dying child. She couldn't bear the crying of her child that was dying at such a cruel and miserable death. Then all of a sudden, a malach appears, says, don't you worry. You're worried about your son? Don't worry. Vayishmael Akim es Kohanar. The Torah says, and Hashem heard the voice of the Nar. But she was crying. What do you mean? Because the Nar was crying too. The Nar was crying too. But the Nar's crying was more deep and more sincere than the crying of her mother. And she was a tzedekus, despite the fact she was banished. We know she had a name later called Keturah, from the word Ketores, incense. She remarried Avram. That goes later in the parasha. But the Torah is telling us that there is a level of tefillah. She was crying out of her heart. There was no... those tears were unique and real. But the cry of the heart of the Na'ar was greater, and it pierced the heavens more effectively than the cry of her mother watching him die. You understand what I'm saying? Tefillah is a nature. It does what it does if it is meant to communicate with Hashem. But of course, if a person babbles away, is davening, then it's a very poor tefillah. I know some people want to know, for example, it's a very poor joke, but it's true. If some people want to know, when they ask, when does your minion start davening? Right? That's most people's questions. Some people said, when does your minion finish? I want to know when it finishes. And, you know, and I was at a minion, unfortunately, I couldn't keep up. I could not keep up. As good as I could read Hebrew, I couldn't keep up. I just and there was like a race of how fast. It was a competition, and people were like saying, no, faster, something like that. That's not called quality davening. I'm not sure what that's called, but it's certainly not the kind of davening that we're talking about. The davening that we're talking about is tefillah that reaches the heavens and it accomplishes. But I think what's important over here is that every one of us, on our own level, on our own perception of Emun and Petachin, can make a tremendous difference in our tefillah. Having said that, I think we're just about ready to daven tomorrow. I just want to conclude that it's in our hands, it's in our ability to beseech Hashem with tefillah, to know that it's not asking Hashem miracles, but it's asking Hashem to communicate with Him, and the nature of the tefillah will in itself accomplish, and this will help give you a chance to ask Hashem for anything you want. And if you're privileged to God's gifts, Hashem will very graciously and happily answer your tefillah. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
To me, it was a revelation too, according to what I just learned. That tefillah is a teva.
We have 10 now.
With me, tefillah is like materialistic.
That's fine.
It can be measured.
It has a certain.
But then it should be able
property. Did I stop it? Yeah.
One does something with tefillah.
It has the properties. It has the properties of a natural occurrence.
We know a lot of people that never daven and still successful.
That's for different reasons. Okay, gentlemen, have a wonderful week.